Welcome to the Priority Lane podcast, the show where we explore the power of prioritizing and how successful people use this to achieve real growth by doing less, but doing it better. I'm your host, Nigel Catt, and each episode I sit down with leaders, creators, and top-performing professionals to uncover how they filter out the noise, focus on what matters, and discuss the techniques they use to build success based on clarity, not chaos. We'll also take time out and delve back into history to uncover bizarre or unusual events and discover how far focus, discipline, and a bit of human curiosity can take us. If you're ready to step into your priority lane, you're in the right place. Now, our guest for this episode is Lawrence Thornsey. Lawrence has been involved in sales and business development for 30 years across industries like finance, legal, automotive, hospitality, local government, pharma, and the list goes on. He's had his own boutique event agency business until COVID forced it to close. And since then, he's been consulting for different businesses and now is the country manager for UK and Ireland for My Brokers App. Lawrence, welcome to the podcast and how are you today?
Hi, Nige. Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm good. Following a little bit of snow yesterday here in the UK, it's cleared up after 10 minutes, so slightly disappointing. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Well, we're at the other end of the spectrum. We had 42 today in Melbourne, and it's down to 33 at the moment as we speak.
Oh, are you all right?
So, now, do you want to give us a bit of insight into Lawrence Thornsey, the man, and specifically what you think your greatest strengths are and how have you used or prioritized these throughout your life and how they have led to where you are now? I see you've got a very strong background in sales business development. So what makes Lawrence tick and make you so good at that?
Well, firstly, what a compliment. I don't think professed to say I was good at it, but I'm still here 3 decades later. I guess for me, strengths-wise, there's a number of things I think for business. One is resilience, empathy, be able to see opportunities that perhaps others haven't, making sure that you do what you say you're going to do, and always, you know, listening and be open to new thoughts, opinions, ideas, no matter where they come from. So, you know, for me, resilience that I've just mentioned, I think is a key focus because we never always get it right every time. So it's important to just shrug those, you know, those losses off or, you know, the ones that didn't quite come off and, you know, not take it personally and just keep going. I think, you know, that's something that I've always done. You probably remember we worked together a long time ago, about 27 years ago. And, you may remember that, you know, the sales technique or the business technique we were taught, which was very aggressive, we needed real thick skin, if you remember.
Yeah. 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 No, exactly right. And look, I've also watched a lot of documentaries and read stories about successful people, great inventors that changed the world with their inventions and technologies. And no one ever got it right first time. They were all failures before they were successful.
Yeah,
so
true.
The only difference between them and other people is that they picked themselves off the mat and gave it another go. And it was that final go that the world remembers them for. It doesn't remember their failures. It remembers their successes. So yeah, resilience, hanging in there, and backing yourself.
Yeah. So that was, you know, that was a. Obviously, as I said, that's a key one, you know, for anybody starting in business, any, you know, youngsters straight out of, you know, graduating or whatever, going to their job is to, you know, have resilience and energy and also the enthusiasm and desire to just get stuff done. I think, you know, that's, I think that that's missing somewhat perhaps in, you know, the newer generation. I don't know. I think empathy that I mentioned is hugely important because it is, for me, it's all about, you know, the human element, and, you know, being able to, you know, listen to people, whether you're buying or selling, is hugely important, you know, so because at the end of the day, we're people. That's the listening that comes into it for me. I think it's very, very important, you know, whether you're selling something or whether you're buying, is to listen to your buyer, your seller, to really establish whether or not you can, you have something that they need or, you know, they want. So, I think, well, as I said, sorry, do the, you know, doing what you say you're going to do is again, massive. That's something that I've always made sure that, I put, you know, in the priority lane for me is, you know, if you tell a client that you will do something by a specific time or day, make sure you do it. You know, it's yeah. Again, it's, you know, for me, it's just common courtesy.
Yeah. So along your journey, have you turned down opportunities that, you know, may have been successful, but just didn't feel right for you? Thought, well, look, I can do this, but my heart's not in it. I'm just going to stick true to myself and prioritize my journey and where I want to go?
For sure. Yeah. You know, there have been, I'm sure, many people, you know, offers come along or an opportunity comes along that, you know, looks good. But I think, you know, for me, it was always important to, I think, manage expectations, what I felt I was comfortable and happy with, and did it fit in with, you know, my ethic, that sort of thing. I agree. Like, so I have done that. I'm not saying that those opportunities that I passed over, you know, weren't successful, but, you know, if it's not for you, then, you know, be confident enough to, and aware enough to make that decision and, you know, move on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, I think it was mentioned in an earlier podcast about if you do what you're passionate about, you never work a day in your life.
That is absolutely correct. Yes, it's very true.
Now, this podcast, The Priority Lane, is about prioritizing things that are important, whether they be in personal or business life, and how business leaders or leaders in their field exemplify this. Now, you have a strong marketing and sales background. I want to ask how you identify things that are a priority and then, just as important, ensure that they are treated as a priority. And I'm particularly interested in the sales and marketing, as this is an area that is crucial for all businesses and an area that is getting increasingly bombarded by new technologies, new, whether they be gimmicks, fads, or actual changes in technology, changes in the way people can market themselves. How do you find how to find what is a priority for you and what you're trying to achieve, and then to make sure that is treated as a priority?
I mean, this is it's a very great question, a deep question too, nice, to be fair. You mentioned, you know, the advent of technology and how quickly it develops and moves forward, and, you know, the adaptation that we all have to kind of adopt in order to keep up or, you know, not be left behind, so to speak. For me, in terms of sales and marketing, you remember yourself so many, you know, years ago, how things have changed. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, the human element is something that I always put at the forefront, because, you know, the world is, you know, developed and run, and ideas and technology is created by people, right? So, you know, for me, I really like to focus on that human element in my sales and marketing and any business development plan that come up with, because, you know, this is who you want to reach. So your target market or your route to market, for me, is all about the human element. You know, whereas, you know, a lot of people nowadays not hide, but they prefer to be contacted via email or, you know, what I call behind the sort of scenes, because that way, if they don't answer, you're not sure whether they got that sort of thing. Whereas in, you know, when I first started, you know, my career back in mid-90s, you know, we got on the phone, people spoke to each other. You know, it wasn't necessarily it was a very aggressive, you know, cold calling. But, you know, the fact is, you know, we didn't have that technology back then, you know, mobile phones and, you know, and all the apps and all those sorts. We didn't have that. So we had to speak to people, you know, and I hold that in high regard still. Obviously not the process of cold calling and annoying and rude to people as we were, but, you know, the people aspect is a massive focus for me. And so that's what I stick with.
So, you know? So yeah. And you're right. So the advent of this new technology basically almost becomes a shield for some people. Or an excuse for not making that direct contact.
Correct. You know, and I think from a sales perspective, if you ask yourself truly, what is sales really? You know, and for me, it is basically you're trying to sell a product that someone doesn't know, okay, from a person that they don't know. So of course they're immediately on the back foot. Oh, I don't know. But if you don't listen or take the chance to listen to somebody about a new product or a new company that has a product, how are you going to know whether it would actually streamline your business or at least give you a springboard to do better? How do you know?
Well,
you know, that's a question that I always put to potential clients.
Yeah, and look, that's a great point. And look, this is a great segue into our historical event. As you know, Lawrence, each episode, pardon me, we delve into a quirky historical fact of the month that we're in, which happens to be January. Today, we're going to talk about the first canned beer. I assume you're familiar with beer and the concept of putting it in a can?
I have a limited knowledge on that, yes.
Right, okay. Okay, do you want to have a stab at which country actually produced the first canned beer?
I don't know. I'm going to go someone like Belgium.
It was America. That was an easy one. Yeah. Okay, so let's have a chat about it. So the first canned beer is produced. We really would not want to live in a world without cold canned beer. From January 24, 1935, we no longer had to. That was when Gottfried Kruger Brewing Company and the American Can Company teamed up to put cans of Kruger's Cream Ale and Kruger's Finest Beer in the stores of Richmond, Virginia for the first time. Cans had long been an established way of containing food, and the concept of supplying beer in this way had been kicked around since 1909. However, it was not until Prohibition was repealed in 1933 that the American Can Company hit on the idea of a can featuring a coating of an animal and brewer's pitch. This was designed to stop the beer reacting against the metal, which affected the taste and colour. Also, a pressurised can controlled the internal pressures caused by pasteurisation. The first brewery willing to take a chance on the cans was Kruger. But even when the results met with public approval ratings of over 90%, it didn't persuade the other breweries. It was only when rivals like Einhauser-Busch found their market shares falling as a result of the new canned beer that they changed their minds. By the time 1935 ended, more than 200 million canned beers had been sold in the US. Now, that's some growth. And for a product which you just mentioned before, that didn't exist. No one knew about this product. It didn't exist at the start of the year, and by year's end, they'd sold more than 200 million. Certainly, we know where the Americans' consumers' priorities laid coming out of Prohibition. Have you ever been involved with a business that experienced such extraordinary growth?
I mean, wow, firstly, what a history lesson. that's staggering figures, considering 1935, what was the population of the US?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Lawrence, because I've been doing my research. And the population in the US in 1935 was 127 million.
And
50 million of these were under the age of 21, which means basically every person legally able to buy the product did so about three times on average. So I think I'd tick that off as a successful launch. Don't know how you'd rate it.
As I said, that's a staggering success story. My only thing with the way my brain works is, you mentioned the brewery, Kruger. Well, that's not an American name. It's German. So, I'm not going to say it was America. I'll say it was German instead of Belgium. But, yeah.
And also, was it Bush?
Yeah, exactly. So, a staggering set of figures there, Nige. I've never been involved with something that has had that sort of overnight success. But I think one of the key words why that worked and why it was so successful is timing, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think any major business, or if you speak to any of the, you know, the current planet's billionaires, you know, you ask them whether timing of any of their deals that they've had that have been successful was a factor, I'm pretty sure they'll say it was, you know?
Yeah.
And also, if you think now, I mean, that I would say maybe 10, 15 years ago, a simple marketing model was age, sex, lifestyle. So if you had a new product or, you know, you're trying to push it to market, those three things, what age group are we targeting? What sex are they? Male, female, for example. And what is their lifestyle? Do they work in the city? That sort of thing, right? And a good example of that was Bacardi Breeza. I'm not sure if you remember.
Yes. Yep.
You know, they were on the market for, I don't think, any more than maybe 18 months to two, three years. It was not a one-hit wonder, but they were so popular because they targeted young women who were affluent, you know, and like worked in the city, for example. And they used, you know, things like flavors like melon. So it was all about vocabulary as well, which is, you know, I think certainly important. Whether that worked, you know, for the Kruger Brewery back in 1930s, I have no idea. But whoever came up with the idea and the timing, like you say, post-prohibition, I mean, that's genius. It's a stroke of luck.
Well, yeah, and especially in the industry that they're in. I mean, they don't just have to promote their product. They have to change people's behavior in what can be quite a personal and even parochial activity of beer drinking. Drawing on your experience, what do you see as the keys in changing market behavioral perceptions, whether it be in the beverage industry or any other industry?
Yeah, as I said, you know, something I keep touching on is you know, the human element of it. We're now, unashamedly, we are, I think, a species of convenience and speed. If we can get what we need quicker, we're gonna jump on that. But as I said, behind that is still somebody. There is still somebody creating, you know, apps, there's the technology. So, you know, and as you mentioned earlier, that it's like a screen, like they're hiding behind the technology. And, you know, I'd really like to see people start talking to people again. I think it's a dying art. It's something that we've got vocal cords for a reason. Apart from singing in the shower, which I understand you do poorly.
You understand incorrectly.
I just think it would be so nice to, you know, that if people in business, we start to, you know, we talk to each other more. You know, the COVID, I had my own little boutique event agency business, which was just running fantastically well. And unfortunately, COVID, you know, forced me to close that because 100% of the events that I managed and ran and operated were face-to-face. They were in person. And of course, COVID, you couldn't do that. So 100% of my business stopped because, you know, I didn't have the resources to do, everyone migrated to the sort of, you know, the webinar system and online portals. And I just didn't have the infrastructure to work with that. Plus, it just wasn't something that, you know, I was interested in doing. I wanted to bring people together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think for me, I'd like to see, you know, the human element a lot more. You know, the conferences and exhibitions that still run globally, I think are great. I love that, you know, because that, and I think people who go, they really enjoy that interaction. But I'd also like to see people not be so frightened of taking an unsolicited email, an unsolicited call, you know, because you just never know. You know, and the other thing I'd like to, you know, push is I'm a big fan of, you know, keeping an open mind and listening to any idea, you know, as I said before, from wherever it may be. I'm a big fan of zero hierarchy business model because everybody for me in, you know, the team I had in my event agency, everybody I made sure I wanted to hear from them. You know, come and tell me if you've got an idea of how we can do something better or, you know, make the experience better. Tell me, I want to hear it. You know, I'm a big believer in the zero hierarchy model because if you're not open to, you know, everyone that's with you or works with you, and what they might have, you know, in the recesses of their brain, you know, I just think you're missing a trick. Yeah, the human element to me is hugely important.
Do you think that I take your point, and it's true about people not being open to entertain or consider new ideas or approaches? Do you think that's changed over the last, say, 30 years because there is that, you know, that email culture, and once email established, it wasn't long before marketers found it and, you know, spammers were spamming everyone, that it came a time where people said, well, I'm sick of this. I'm not going to, you know, entertain any new ideas that from anyone that I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you know yourself, Nigel, it's, you know, business and marketing, sales, you know, approaches, routes to market, all that has changed in the last 30 years hugely, you know, for the reasons that we talked about, you know, a few minutes ago. But yeah, I think, you know, that it's a bit difficult sometimes if you have to, you know, perhaps adopt, well, if I'm not with them, I'm against them. So you kind of fall into the email culture, which, you know, I suppose it's a softer way of getting in touch with people. You know, the cold calling technique where, you know, if you remember 30 years ago, it was very abrasive. That's not going to work anymore. Yeah. And of course, you know, I think what proves my point on the human element is that most businesses that have clients or suppliers, they know those people personally pretty well already. You've got to, so why do they stick with them? Because they know them, they trust them. You know, and trust is another massive word, like timing. You know, trust is a huge, huge word in business, because, you know, if a supplier that you eventually go, okay, we're going to take a contract out with them, we're going to pay them to provide this service. Generally, you're going to work with people that you know, or you've met before, or you've been recommended to. So for me, that just proves the human element that I mentioned is right. You know, it's very difficult to walk into, you know, or get on the phone or walk into a boardroom for your first meeting and come away with the sale, should we say.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know you. They don't know your product. They don't know your company. So this is why, for me, the getting in person, face-to-face with someone to be able to promote or discuss what you might have that could help, I think is a you know, it needs to be done more, really.
And that, you're right. And that creates an opportunity for people, say, like yourself, very comfortable with that human element, that human interaction. If society's moving away, that aren't as, now there's less people as comfortable as you doing that, that's an opportunity for you to say, well, hang on, I've got a bigger share of the market here. I can go out there and I'm a point of difference to people.
Yes, but yeah, potentially. But again, you know, is what we touched on. It's difficult to, you know, I can make a phone call, I can send an email and say, listen, you know, have a look at this. You know, if you need more information or whatever, check the website, which is the standard sort of protocol that we all use. You know, but I always offer, listen, I'm more than happy to come and visit you or meet you anywhere you like, you know, to because I believe in what I have, you know, it's, you know, and I know for a fact that it is going to, you know, make you more successful in your business. You know, I think the difference 30 years ago is, you know, when you're a youngster and you're getting on the phone, because that's your only mode of, you know, contacting someone or a potential client, is do you really believe in what you're offering? Yeah. Whereas now, you know, 30 years later, I know exactly what I have, and I know that it's, you know, 100% going to help people. The difficulty is convincing someone who you've never spoken to before, or they don't know you, to go, all right, Lawrence, we'll meet, we'll have a Zoom call, whatever it might be. And that actually, that's the hurdle, you know, and even if something is free, trying to get someone to, you know, have that 2-minute conversation, 5-minute conversation with you is really, really difficult, because I feel, you know, the advent of technology, which we've mentioned, and everything is pretty much app based. You know, a prime example, I was watching one of the TV streaming platforms. I won't mention which, because I'm not going to give them airtime, and they haven't. And all of a sudden, up on the home screen was an advertisement for a foreign car maker. Again, I won't give them their time. And it quite simply said on the left, download the app here for the info. There was a picture of the car. I think it was an electric vehicle with its range of whatever it is, 28 miles or whatever they do. You know, it had the range and it had, you know, price and something else. So there was just very bullet point but there were just bullet points under the car. On the left was click here to download the app to view. And at the bottom, it said, press up on your remote control to buy. Now, right. And I do know of the manufacturer, but I'm still internal combustion engine man, be fair. You know, I drive a 3-litre straight six BMW from about 25 years ago because I like to keep everyone warm. So, for me, I sat there and thought, wow. And I even took a picture of it with my phone because I just found that marketing, it's like, this is a sales technique, a marketing technique that I've never used, you know, particularly being an unknown, download here. Oh, okay. And the number of people that must have downloaded, it must be huge. So
yeah,
how do you measure the marketing trend now? If all you have to say is download here, two words, and someone does it. I mean, I find that fascinating.
And it's to your point that you made earlier is the human element. It's whatever the company thinks is good in terms of marketing is pretty much irrelevant. It's what the prospects think. So you make it easy for them. And that's, I guess, the technology makes it very easy to do that nowadays.
Sure. But I mean, you still see this particular electric vehicle manufacturer. I understand that they've gained some, you know, quite a level of prominence and success over here in the UK. But for me, whoever came up with that idea, I feel it's very clever because you're just jumping over all the traditional methods of marketing or sales or business development. And you're just giving, it's an imperative. It's what I call a marketing imperative. So you're telling them what to do, download here. And the person goes, okay. I think it's amazing because, you know, it's, have I done that? Probably I did it with, you know, my banking apps, of course, on the mobile, that sort of thing. Much detriment of the high street branches, which are all pretty much disappeared now in the UK. I just found that really interesting. Whether I can adapt to an imperative marketing platform, I'm not sure I can. I don't know.
So you found that more high tech than the 2-page fax we used to send out?
Somewhat, and the, you know, that shrill telecommunications connection that your internet has, remember? You know, you need to be a bat to pick it up. So, I just find, you know, the technology is great. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, could I adopt this, you know, imperative marketing strategy, in my sales? Perhaps, you know, I don't know. I haven't really thought about applying it, but perhaps it's time I should.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do they say? You got to adapt or die.
Exactly. So, but interestingly, 1935, we're still drinking out of tinnies. That's what you call it.
Yes.
I mean, that's a huge longevity. I mean, that's massive success. So, and I think, that was a good one, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you for that, Lawrence. That's great. Now, just to finish up, we're going to just have a few questions to you about prioritizing and how you manage that. So how do you decide what deserves your time and what doesn't? Now, this can be in personal life, can be in business, whatever. But how do you decide what's a priority for you?
Good question. Imagine it would be, does it serve me and does it serve those around me that, you know, that might need help or assistance? I suppose I would, if you look from a family perspective, let's take that. You know, I always, you know, prioritize certainly the children to, you know, what can I do to perhaps, you know, giving them a little bit more time because, you know, as you know, work-life balance was always a little bit tricky, you know, yep. Particularly for, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, who they work, you know, effectively the old adage that you don't own a business, the business owns you. Yep. I think being aware is a big focus. Put a spotlight on, you know, prioritizing your awareness of your time, how you're going to divide it. You know, with the, you know, where family's concerned, I make sure if I it goes back to, you know, doing what you say you're going to do. If I say I'll be done by 3, 4 o'clock, whatever it might be, make sure you down tools at that time and go and do what you said. Yeah. You know, that's a priority.
Well, which sort of harks back to what you mentioned earlier about on the client side of things. If you tell a client you're going to do something, make sure you do that.
Absolutely. So that is a, you know, massive priority. I think, you know, for any supplier or whatever, you do what you're going to say you do. Make that a priority. It's very, very important, you know, because it's, you know, you will then get that reputation for being reliable, you know, and reliability is like, wow. And the other R is responsibility. You have a responsibility to, you know, particularly if you're a business owner, you have a huge responsibility to, you know, make sure you deliver what your business says you're going to deliver when you say you're going to deliver it. You also have a big responsibility, which I feel is a big priority, on, you know, to nurture your staff, your team. That's hugely important, you know. So, you know, prioritizing those sorts of things. And I think Richard Branson said that, you know, you train your staff well so they can leave, but you treat them well so they don't want to. Right. So, you know, he made a priority there of, you know, focusing on, again, you know, that people element, his team, giving them the skills and the knowledge to advance if they wanted to, but yet treating them well enough, as you should, so that they don't want to go anywhere else. They love it. So I think,
wow, you that's know, great. I like that. I hadn't heard that before. That's yeah. Very good.
Yeah, it's not mine, but it was
no.
So
yeah,
thanks,
Richard. Yep. So I mean that's very good with what you said there. Do you have a way of like a self-check mechanism to make sure you're practicing what you preach? Of, you know, how you said, if you said you're going to be finished, well, that's an easy one. If you said you're going to be finished by 3, you make sure you finish by 3. But in other aspects, do you have a way of making sure that you don't get distracted and just don't go over time or just neglect priorities that shouldn't be neglected?
Yeah, so it's something I use in business and in family life, particularly when the children were younger. It's kind of along the lines of, you know, do what you say you're going to do. But is you give the timeline of what's capable, what's going to happen. So, and you can do, I do that with, you know, clients. You let them know, I'm going to be doing this here. I have whatever it is at, you give them a timeline so they know the boundaries and know they've got it. You're managing the expectation. You know, personally for me, I'm old school. So I use a diary and a pen or pencil, and I make sure that I make notes for what I want to achieve for the day. From a business perspective, you know, do I need to research these, you know, potential clients? What have I got that might help them? And then I set out a goal that I want to, you know, achieve, hopefully by that day. But yeah, I mean, when you have, for me, when you have an existing client that you supply to, you know, give them a schedule, manage those expectations, put a priority on that. And as I said, that all goes back to, you know, doing what you say you're going to do, which is, you know, look, I'm going to do this. We've got this plan in place. We can have this over to you by then. Make sure you do that. But so that is a, you know, certainly for me is give that communication early so that they know what the process is. Mm. You know, I think that's for me is hugely important.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things you said there really struck with me. One is communication. As I've seen so many deals fall over or people getting stressed or wrong decisions being made or people worrying about nothing because of lack of communication. And especially with, let's say, a business deal, for example, where, you know, both sides are getting a bit anxious about it. Is it going to happen? What's going on? And you're waiting on an answer. You're waiting on a signature. You're waiting on whatever it is. The person doing that may have gone out for lunch. They may have been called into hot. You don't know what's going on. And it's the not knowing, the lack of communication, which causes a lot of issues. And if people communicated and, like you said, tell people exactly what's going on, align the expectations, and then stick to it.
Correct. I think it's fundamental human courtesy but you know, like you say, in business with deals, I think also sometimes if you have an impasse where it's not quite over the line, or, you know, it's gone quiet, that sort of thing, I think sometimes it's important also to just step back and ask the question, you know, because questions are you hopefully get answers, and ask the question, what else do you need? You know, what can I do? You know, it's, you know, be open, be honest with, you know, and be fair. You know, I think for me, I think in my career, a lot of any business deals that I think haven't come off is because perhaps the offer wasn't actually fair to both sides. And I've seen a shift in that. Certainly, I'll give you an example, a hospitality client. They were asking for too much. You know, the rate card they were asking for was clearly too high. And I managed to negotiate with them to say, look, you're going to make profit on this, but you don't need to make, you know, 160% profit. That's, you know, that's effectively greedy. If you come down and everyone can share in the spoils, then you've created a much nicer, I would call it, business link, a business hoop. You know, as soon as someone in that link, that hoop, behaves, you know, a little bit outside, I think, the boundaries, that loop will break, and then it breaks down. So it's important to also be fair. Now, if you are a supplier, don't, you know, just add, you know, a couple of zeros on because I want to make quick buck. Try and develop that relationship and say, look, you know, this is what we need. If I need to hit this just to make, you know, net zero, I can't operate like that. I need to make a profit, because we all do. So, you know, as I'm saying, be open, be honest about it, communicate, you know, the boundaries and the expectations, and stick to them.
Yeah, no, sounds good. And you're right. I mean, you can try to get super greedy on one deal, but you'll never do business with those people again. And word will get around.
Right, exactly. So, you know, for me, longevity is a priority. You know, you need to be looking, prioritizing, how can we secure this deal, and how can we keep it? You know, that's has to be a priority, because the one hit wonders are, you know, exactly that.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And the other point you mentioned, it's talking about giving that expectation, giving that schedule to the client or supplier, whoever it may be, then they make you accountable as well. So it's not just on yourself to be self-disciplined and accountable. You've got other parties expecting you and staying on you as well to make sure that the priorities are delivered.
No, correct. And that's where the responsibility of, you know, being a business owner or a senior individual in work, you have that responsibility, that, and you should, you know, I think that people should, you should embrace that. It's like you say, that you manage to, you get a reputation for delivering what you say, you know, how you say and what you say. You should have a good long, you know, business relationship with those individuals. So yeah.
Yeah. Makes life a lot easier if you've got clients when you wake up in the morning, you don't have to go find them each day.
Would be nice.
So just finally, what's one piece of advice that you've been given by someone? Again, can be business, can be personal, that you've taken on board, that you like, that you'd like to share with others?
I think just what I, you know, banged on about for the last 40 minutes, Nigel, is, you know, do what you say you're going to. I think it's, be honest, and be yourself, I think those of my gran used to say, just be yourself, because no one else can be, you know. And I remember thinking, you know, it's obvious, you know. I think being yourself and, you know, being honest and doing what you say, you'll be all right, definitely. So that's kind of what I've stuck with that. Oh, my granddad, by the way, good Lord. So that 1935 nugget you gave us earlier used to do sale or return in bottles, not cans. So,
oh, okay.
Do you know what that is? So like the milkman or whoever it was, they would deliver, you know, the old plastic crates with cider bottles or ale bottles in.
Yep.
And they'd come back at the end of the week, and you only paid for what you'd consumed. and he took the rest back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So how things have advanced now. You could imagine going to a supermarket. What do you call them over there? Bottle shops. And you buy four pack and you only have two and you go back. No, I don't want those. Can I have my money back? They'll throw you out of the shop. Yeah.
Well, they could probably do it. You probably wouldn't find many people taking them back.
No, there you are. But, you know, that's a prime example of, you know, how that marketing, the tool changed, you know. Sale or return was based on trust and everybody used to do it. It's just like, okay, and you leave, no one nicked them. It was just, it was amazing. So,
That was my first thought, that if they just leave them at the front door.
No, it's just.
Go around and take it.
No, honestly, it's just different era. Yeah. So yeah, try that. Next time you go to the bottle shop, if you ever do, of course, you know, buy your four beers and take two back the next day and go, oh, I didn't really want those. Can I have the money back? They can go, no. But I haven't opened them. The sell-by date's still good. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah. I'll let them know maybe when I buy it. Listen, if I'm not happy, I'll bring them back to you. Yes. Look, Lawrence, thank you very much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And look, I think you've really imparted some pearls of wisdom there. Your ethos when it comes to business and life in general is be yourself and the human element. Because being true to yourself, if you're not, other people pick up on that anyway. And they'll be going, what's going on here? Something's not right. So you've based your career on being yourself, open communication and setting expectations. And I think there's a lesson in that for everyone. So on that, I will say farewell. Lawrence, you have a good day today. And please, everyone, come back next time for the next edition of the Priority Podcast. Take care.
This episode is sponsored by My Broker's App, a white label app built specifically for financial advisors and wealth management professionals. If you want to know how you can have your own app exclusively for your business and your clients up and running by this time next week, visit mybrokers.app or download the free My Brokers demo app from your favorite app store.